UU congregations, they say, are at times comprised of a surprising number of people who actually would prefer not to join anything at all. Some of you are legendary in this regard, and I'll confess, for many years, I myself would have been skeptical about joining, certainly about joining an organized religion. And maybe it's that old part of me that's been stimulated lately, if everything goes according to plan over the spring. I will be awarded final fellowship status as a UU minister, where you've kind of passed out of your probationary period, and they say, oh, I guess you're a UU minister for life. Gulp. So maybe that's why there have been so many wonderings and doubts and thoughts and fears arising in me lately. Trying to figure out, too, what it means to be a UU minister for the rest of my life, what it means to be a UU minister in relationship to all y'all. And I'll admit that at times I feel some doubt. It's true of just about everybody in the world, something we honor, even celebrate. But when I wonder about our tradition and my place in it, some of the issues that come up are tied in with the legacy of our humanist tradition. And that is a big and important part of our tradition. And while there is nearly all of it that I will proclaim myself boldly a humanist, there are parts that I struggle with and I want to come to terms with. I feel like maybe we all might struggle with that for the greater benefit of our congregation and our faith and our world. I struggle, as anybody, I think, of faith does, to keep the faith. And sometimes that's challenging among folk who don't necessarily have it always. What do we speak of? How do I present myself as an exemplar of a way of living? How can we find what truly does absolutely bind us? And humanism, as I understand it, is, beautifully put, the healing broth that I think does. But I have come to believe that true humanism embraces the religious dimension of life, just as true religion embraces the humanist standards of truth and the use of reason, the reality of our free will and our own responsibility for our lives, the ethical demands that that places upon us, our rightful home in the natural world, and center of all, our care and love for one another as a trustworthy barometer of the good life, loving and caring for one another. Now, there's humanism with a small h, maybe, that's very embracing. That's what I'm talking about. There's sometimes humanism with a capital H. That always means there's a movement involved, and an ism's going to get tacked on there. You got to be careful. And there have indeed have been a humanist movement in the United States and in our religious communities, in our churches, particularly in the early part of the 20th century. Humanist manifestos were written proclaiming the centrality of science and the use of reason, and that it was time to set down old fears and superstitions. Although not every early humanist was so, in time it did come, in fact, to be equated, unfortunately, with being anti-religious. Now, at its best, humanism, this call to tend to the here and now, to not get hung up on things that we cannot say, I have seen or I have heard, okay, that brings us down to earth. It demands humane and humanitarian action. It's also humble about the truth. It knows we must be true to ourselves, but it recognizes that's true of everybody else too. And at its very best form, it is deeply reverential to nature. When it is religious, it's not particularly interested in God, or has a whole different, much more natural version of it. Unfortunately, at its worst, too, though, it is hyper-intellectual. thinks it alone owns science and reason, and that a person cannot simultaneously believe in what science has found and in things which are invisible, we might say. And it puts all its eggs in the baskets of human beings. And as many of you know, we're a little sketchy. It also sometimes challenges us to a life of such noble striving for perfection, I find, that in a way it can condemn us to always feel that we fall short. One of the main tenets is that our satisfaction in life is found through caring for one another and for making the world a better place. And not all of our lives, not all of our circumstances within our lives allow us to do, as we've talked about before, sometimes a whole lot more than that, than be nice to the person we're digging a ditch next to, right? Is one a failure under those circumstances? In the good book, The Consolations for the Death of a Friend, it's a dialogue from an old Greek history, two of the greatest best friends of all time, Laelius and Scipio. Scipio has died. They're asking Laelius, how are you consoled? He's consoled because they had the best friendship ever. So I don't know what consolation that is for, you know, the weak, barely ever call you old friendships that I try and maintain with my high school friends and so forth. If excellence, if perfect clarity and perfect wisdom at all times is what we mean by fulfillment, many of us will feel doomed at times. And this in particular I contrast with our universalist heritage that says, in the end, you're way more than anything you do. You are what you are and have you value because you are. Just because you are. So unfortunately, I think humanism has come to be equated with atheism, and although there are perfectly good reasons for not believing in God, or for at least questioning much of what's said about him, her, it, or them, too often this too is not a philosophical position for, but a philosophical position against. It offers sound critiques of bad theology and bad religious practice, but in the form it takes, in the writings of, for me, Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, some of this ilk that is called the New Atheists, it's mean. It too thinks it solely owns science and religion, conflates things that ought not to be conflated. There really is a difference between believing the web of life is a holy thing in some Taoist perspective and thinking that what we might call holy has to be some judge with a beard or a lightning bolt. And I really do ask, would getting rid of all religion, if that were possible, if we could just wipe it off the world, would that actually make things better or solve our human problems? Would we know what to do next? You might ask the Russians or the Chinese some of those questions. We might look around to our own nation, which to me is not ruled by religion, but by amoral corporations and advertising firms and Hollywood studios. There's something missing there to me, and the worst of all of these books is they're so smarmy and brainy, and I wonder if the writers would have any idea what a Rumi or a Mary Oliver poem is really getting at. And the biggest problem for me is that the new atheism acts like liberal religion never occurred, like there never was a Channing or a Parker. And most of all, it ignores the data, the scientific data, the observable, tell me what your story is data of the religious experiences of other people. That's data. You got to shine a light or a microscope on that, too. My friend Matt across the street was contacted, or he somehow got in touch with, there's a study that, Denkins, a philosophy professor, you could probably help me out here, Rick. Denkins? Harvard? Some guy. Who's some smart guy that I'm setting up as a straw man in my sermon named Denkins. Grr! He's doing a study of unbelieving pastors. And I guess Matt felt he qualified or at least wanted to have the conversation with the person. And it's because He qualifies as unbelieving because he doesn't literally take as true some of the more fanciful and fantastic things in his holy book that most folk with a reasoning brain realize can't really happen exactly that way. But Dankinson, the person that came to interview Matt, 5 hours long interview, Matt said, it seemed like they were out to prove that he's thereby a hypocrite. That if he's getting up and participating in Christian liturgy and he doesn't think certain of these things true, he's somehow a hypocrite or lying to people or something. And there's no nuance in that position. It's kind of fascinating, though, actually. I think it is true that most liberal Christian pastors, and Jewish rabbis for that matter, believe less than their flocks. And my experience so far is that most UU clergy believe more. It's true. So if humanism equals anti-religion, I am not one. And if atheism means anti-religion, given that that's kind of what we're trying to do here by a different name and in a different way, it's hard to make space for that. And I think that's missing the point, that the humanist perspective makes room for all that is human. I cringe every time I sing Imagine. I don't want no religion. I just want no bad religion. I sneak it in there. Because I think, again, true humanism embraces the religious dimension of life. True religion embraces the humanist standards of truth and reason and free will and ethical living and respect for each other. And in that regard, there is so much that religious and non-religious people share. These are words. Maybe we don't need to get hung up about them. But I want to use humanist in a new way. And that's one reason I was so pleased to discover this book, The Good Book. Oh, with its Genesis, wisdom, parables, lamentations, songs, histories, proverbs, drawn primarily from the Greek and Roman and Renaissance humanist and philosophical traditions. It's lovely. It loves nature. It's filled with good advice, a lot of which you find in the other Bible too. But in that humanist way, it simply has no concern for religion or God whatsoever. And in a way, I think that's great. If that is not your concern, there's still a good life to be led. Although, interestingly, the Proverbs section has no section on happiness either. I observed, certainly when Michael Krasny came and spoke here, that was a great honor for me. He wrote a book of a condition that I read in many of the books of humanism that I read, a kind of spiritual envy. A wish I had something, but I don't, and I just can't, and I'm sorry. That's I get it. I have been there. I have precisely been there on my faith journey, and it's one reason why this community both matters to me and challenges me so much. I also struggle with the reality that humanists seem to actually have less faith in people than I do. Often, there's a sense among the folk who confront me about too much God talk that we're actually all doomed to global warming in the end anyway. I don't buy it. I agree with you 100%. Bad religion is bad. No one has the right to use fear or intimidation to get people to behave a certain way. No one has the right to have uncritical certainty about things of which there can be no actual certainty. And I will die to affirm that atheists are decent, loving people like everybody else. But if there is that spiritual envy or longing, I do have to say, no one finds that which is waiting outside the door without going to it and opening it oneself. As I read Michael Krasny, I watched him talk himself out of the thing he wants. This reality, this data of which I spoke, these other modes of awareness that are available to us, these emotional states of which humanism can sometimes be skeptical. But much of spiritual awareness is non-reasoning. It's not unreasonable, but it is more feeling or intuition, and it's okay to be skeptical of such things, and some have tried to experience and haven't, and that I'm really just sorry about. It doesn't mean that you can't yet, and it also doesn't mean you have to have one. I just ask of everyone, don't tell me what you don't believe in, tell me what you believe in. And if you don't currently believe in anything, I am here to recommend love, truth, beauty, wisdom, nature, the ground of being, yourself, everything that humanism affirms as good and true. Anyone who believes in those things is believing in what I call God, which is what I'm here to serve, I think. I feel like my main job is to help you discover something in your life for yourself, worthy of the name sacred, and then to encourage you to live by your own faith or philosophy, your own mode of being, to find something worthy of being called good and true, and then to encourage you to live by those convictions. Someday I predict these debates between science and religion, between humanism and religion, will be settled. We are in an age of great doubt and change, and religion itself must radically transform to survive. I think that's thrilling. I think these debates are vital. I think the old way must pass and a new way must come. And I think we can be that third way, a middle way. A middle way that wants a book like An Atheist Defends Religion. Why humanity is better off with religion than without it, that looks to sources like Eric Weiner's new book, Man Seeks God, My Flirtations with the Divine. I got turned on to it by one of you. There was an article by him about it, and this was highlighted. This is the dream of the person that gave me this article. I imagine a religious space that celebrates doubt, encourages experimentation, and allows one to utter the word God without embarrassment. A religious operating system for the nuns among us, meaning everybody who checks none on the religion. None. A religious operating system for the nuns among us and for all of us. That's my dream here. That goal for our religious community to be the same goal we have for ourselves as individuals. To be balanced, to be open, to honor that there always must be multiple points of view, but to unite those opposites with a larger, wiser view. To learn to accommodate paradox and uncertainty, to find the courage to stand for something clear and good, and to faithfully proclaim our hope and our trust in life and love. And I am a humanist because I believe we, people, can, should, and will do that. Let it be so. We would be one. It's 3:18.